All right, I'd like to introduce our final speaker. You may know him as Howdy Joe from the Hug Life Ferry or the Hug Life Home Group on Saturday night in Somerset.
Howdy, my name is Joe Maddox.
Howdy.
Oh, man. I want to thank my sponsor for throwing me under the bus. Last time I'll go to his home group. I decided to go to his home group on a Sunday morning and I got fucking...
Alright, go!
But for real, it's an honor to speak at like an event, especially for like the Loremont Highlands Retreat. Super excited. Just a little background on like me in the retreat. I didn't know it was at Queen Mohawk Dam, which happened to be the dam that I used to drive around every day in active addiction. I used to spend like hours of my life driving around that dam just to lo and behold and find out that there happens to be a retreat there where hundreds of addicts meet once a year to, you know, celebrate the gift of recovery. So it's super cool to like be asked to speak at this event. I'm also nervous. I was talking to the other speaker and she's like, "Do you still get nervous?" I'm like, "Fuck yes, man." Like, I took a giant poop before I got here and now I'm really gonna have to poop again. As far as I know, I think that's a good thing. That I'm still nervous when I get asked to speak, man, because my disease still creeps in. Like, I don't care how long I have clean, man, like, my disease is still alive and well. I had to share this. I had a using dream last night, and it was one of those weird ones, man, where you wake up in your dream thinking you used, not knowing if you used or not, and then in my dream, I'm like, oh shit, I gotta speak, and I use, and I'm like, I was freaking out this morning, and that was just another reminder that like this thing's still alive up here. It's still in my head, man. Like, doesn't matter. And I feel like this happens every time I get closer to my clean date. Like, I always get these weird ass dreams, man. And it's just a reminder for me to like to how important it is for me to stay involved in the program. Like, just because life is getting good, life is full, I'm busy. Like, I still need to, you know, show up for Narcotics Anonymous like it showed up for me. A little rundown of where I came from. Heather stole my line. I came from a small town. But, I did. I came from, like, a small town that was so small it was a village. It wasn't even big enough to be a town. Like, it was a tiny place. I grew up there like a rambunctious young kid, dude. Like, my parents, good people, man. My dad taught me respect, some morals and values and shit that eventually I threw away during active addiction. They worked all the time, dude. They worked in the restaurant field. So, like, if you've ever worked in a restaurant or as a server or that, this, like, your hours are from noon till 9 o'clock at night. So my parents weren't always home. They weren't home a lot of time. It was just me and my sister. And I would hang out with my sister while she smoked weed in the garage. I was young, man. Like, I knew my sister did it. I used to sit in there and talk to her while she smoked before I went and ran off with my little friends. And the day that I, like, put something in me, I remember getting off the school bus. And, like, she was older than me, so, like, she was already home. And I remember stomping up my hill mad about, I don't know, probably one of my friends, like, talked to a girl I liked in school. I was in middle school, bro. I was like a baby. And I walked into the garage, and my sister was smoking, and she's like, "Do you want to hit this shit?" I'm like, "Hell yeah." You know? So that was the first time, like, I ever felt a substance, and, like, dude, I felt outside of my body. I got away from those feelings. Like, I remember describing it, like, my head was no longer connected to my body, like, I was carefree. All I wanted to do was ride my dirt bike, man. And, like, I ran with that feeling. I took that feeling and, like, bounced, dude. I remember I rode my dirt bike that day, too, like a fucking maniac. in like perspective, I was a little kid, dude. I had a recorder concert that night. You remember those recorders? Bro, that night I had a recorder concert. I remember being fucking frozen stiff on stage, you know, just holding this recorder, not blowing a fucking note, you know? And that's how where it started for me, man. Like, I finally, like, I found that disconnection from reality, man. Like, I didn't have to feel anything. And it wasn't like I was going through all this pain, but I felt like I never fit in. And to go back further, man, when I came to Narcotics Anonymous, like, they talked about, like, I was an addict before, like, I ever put one in me. And that saying that I heard, I didn't really understand. When somebody said that, I'm like, I don't know if I buy that shit. Until, like, I really thought about it, man. My mom used to read me books when I was real young. She'd always read me books. And she used to read me messed up books. She read me Lord of the Rings.
That's a good book.
It's a great book. Love it. But, like, I was a baby. I was young. And I remember, like, I used to get so mad at my mother when she would stop reading at night. I wanted to stay there. I wanted to keep going, man. I wanted to be on Middle Earth fighting orcs and, like, doing all this crazy shit, straight nerding out, you know. But, like, I would rather be in this fantasy world where all this chaos, the end of the world is going on. Like, I would rather be there than wake up and go to school the next day. Like, I was always looking for this escape, man. And you know, it just progressed from there, man. The disease is progressive. And, like, it's always in a downhill spiral, you know. And I didn't really know that. In high school, I thought I was just having fun, man. And don't get me wrong, I had a great time. I love drugs, man. I wouldn't be here if I didn't, you know. And through high school, it just kept getting worse. I remember by the time it was like my sophomore year of high school, like, I was doing drugs that most normal kids at that age have never heard of. You know, like, I remember my dad fucking, he ended up whooping my ass once, you know, for lying to him where I was sleeping at. And, like, he didn't even know what I was doing that day. I remember, you know, you tell a lie, like, I'm staying at his house. Then he said, I'm staying at his house. And then, like, my dad caught us in the act, you know, and he whooped my ass. And he didn't even know that night I was smoking crack, dude. I was 15 years old smoking crack. Like, that's insane, you know. But, like, none of that affected me. Like, I didn't think there was a problem. Like, dude, I just kept going. And as I progressed in high school, man, I wasn't a bad kid in high school either, dude. I wasn't a bad, like, I wasn't a troublemaker. I wasn't mean to teachers or anything. Like, I was the opposite. I was super nice. I tried to kill people with kindness so I could get my way. It was a form of manipulation, you know. And so I did that. Teachers liked me. Like, everything went smoothly. I just didn't like school. So I spent a lot of time missing school, man. And I started to live for the party. And it started out just the weekend warrior, you know, like, we partied every weekend. And until it turned into I partied every night. And then it turned into, like, I missed school every day, you know. And I would not want to go to school so badly that I would, instead of sleeping in at my house, because I could no longer do that. My dad was smart. Like, he'd catch me passed out in my room. He'd flip that bed over on me, like, get the schoolboy, you know? Well, so adapt or die, I did. I used to keep a blanket and a pillow in my car and go to the Queen Mahoming Dam, where this retreat is every year, and I would park on this back road and just nap. Take a snooze until my friends got out of school, and I'd go pick them up, and then we'd drive around that dam and get it in, you know? Used to do that every day my senior year. I was on homecoming court my senior year. Like I said, I wasn't an asshole. Like, people liked me. But I remember after homecoming court, dude, I missed a whole 9 weeks of school. Like, I just stopped going. Somehow, I ended up graduating high school. And I remember I was that dude that was so fucked up when I walked across stage that, it was bad. That my principal, I made it to my principal, staggered. Made it to my principal. When I got there to shake his hand, he asked me, he's like, will you please leave? And I'm like, oh, shit, you know, this is bad. You know, I thought it was hilarious at the time, but, like, dude was just straight disappointed. Like, I was a wreck on stage. So somehow I graduated, man, and I lucked out, dude. When I got out of high school, I got, like, this really good job. where I traveled up and down the East Coast, and like I made a bunch of money doing the spray guru thing, roofing. More money than I've ever had in my life, more money than I've ever made even to date. But like, I come from a family that's, you know, we're middle class, dude. Like, I never wanted for anything, but like, I didn't have everything. Like, I had the slimy pickle, man. My man knows what I'm talking about. I had this piece of shit green neon, dude. And I was a broke guy in high school, dude. I was broke, so like, I didn't have any money. I just had a car. So everybody else bought all the drugs, and I just drove around, you know, my piece of shit car. Mm-hmm. So when I started like working out of town, making all this money, it was literally a year after high school. I remember I'd work for months at a time, and then I'd come home, and like, this is more money than I've ever had in my life. And like, I felt like I owed my friends, dude. They paid for my ride, you know what I'm saying? All through high school, getting high. So like, I'd come home on the weekends or whenever we got back, and what do you want, dude? Like, let's get it all. And like, I'd do that. I spent a summer, I blew $60,000 in a summer. In a summer, dude. And all on drugs. I had nothing to show for it except for my first overdose. And like, I remember that shit. My first overdose happened to be like the worst one. There was more to come, trust and believe, you know. But it was, it was so bad that I was in a coma for like 4 days. I didn't even realize this until I got clean and I talked to my dad about it. Like, I remember waking up out of that shit. But I was at my best friend's house living at the time, dude, and I remember putting all my shit away, and then I must have woke up in the middle of the night to go puke, and I tripped, I smacked my head off a corner of a coffee table, and laid on the floor for hours. Got a hematoma in my arm, choked to death, like, on my puke, and thank God, like, God working in my life when I wasn't working in his, like, his aunt happened to be a nurse. You know, my best friend, he took all my shit, got me out of his house, left me in the yard, made sure I had no drugs on me, bounced, but he called his aunt. And his aunt gave me mouth to mouth until, like, the ambulance came. And then they like, put me in a coma because I was brain dead for so long that they weren't sure if I was going to come back, you know, if I was going to be all there. And don't, trust and believe, like, I ain't all there, but but still, they were worried, you know. And I remember coming out of that coma, man, and, like, the lady telling me to cough as they pull out the breathing tube, and like the insanity of all these people around me in my life, dude. Like, my mom and dad were there, my friend's mom and dad were there, my babysitter from when I was a little kid, like all these people around me in my life. I'm like, how the fuck did these guys get to the hospital? Well, I was dead for a while, you know, like I was in a coma, so they all were there when I woke up. And then like this doctor's reading off everything in my system. And he's just going down the line, going down the line, and the last thing, and marijuana. And I remember hearing that, and I freaked out. I was like, I'm gonna smoke weed till the day I die. Like, went through all this shit, because, like, I was Joe Pistone. I was holding on to this, like, junkie pride ego, man. Like, I was a stoner kid in high school. Like, that will never change. You know, I didn't take into account all this other shit in my system. I just heard one thing, and I didn't hear a problem in that. I didn't hear that, like, hey, man, you might have a problem, you just overdosed. Like, normal people don't overdose. You know what I'm saying? So, like, but 2 weeks later, dude, I was back to work like nothing happened. The veil of denial that was, like, on me was unaccountable. Like, I couldn't see, like, my hand in front of my face when it came to that. And so I just continued on this path. I didn't think I had a problem. I went back to work, dude, and I ended up in Baltimore, Maryland working. And by this time, dude, like, I was getting to the point where, like, I needed a little something every morning. I needed a pill every day, you know. And I was in Baltimore, and, dude, I couldn't find it. Instead, I found a little baggie. And, like, that little baggie became God, in all honesty. And it's, like, fucked up to say that, but, like, it really did, man. Like, a little bag with some powder in it ruled my fucking life, dude, right after that first one. And I became Joe Butt. Like, Joe's a good worker, but sometimes he's puking on the roof. Joe's a good worker, but sometimes he's in the bathroom a really long time. Joe's a good worker, but, you know, and this shit just progressed. And I still didn't think I had a problem. I never heard of Narcotics Anonymous. I didn't know what an addict was. I knew that, like, you know, some of my friends that shot up, like, they were really bad, but, like, I wasn't that bad. You know what I'm saying? Like, So I still had this bravado, like I was just having a good time. But like in all reality, like I wasn't having a good time. I was starting to become like a prisoner, man. So eventually I was no longer employable, dude. I couldn't hold down a job. I was like 135 pounds, soaking wet on the roof, thinking I was about something. thought I was a good worker, bro.
I'm a hard worker.
Bro, I was a twig. I was blowing in the wind up there, you know? And we were in Connecticut. And, dude, like, I'm full blown. I need something every day. I wasn't making that per diem, that good money anymore. And I was like, I need a raise. You guys need me, blah, blah, blah. Like, thought I was about something. And they were like, no, you can leave. See you later. So I did. I did. I remember I took somebody with me, too. I made him quit, too, with me. Yeah. I like to drag people into my shit. But waited till payday, you know, bought a train ticket and bounced, dude. I remember I showed up. I was in New York City for one day. And I blew my whole fucking paycheck. Showed up in Johnstown, Pennsylvania with like half a bottle of Jack Daniels, some shitty weed, and like the disease of addiction on my back. Like backpack mode, carrying this shit. And dude, when I came back to Johnstown, I had nothing. All that money I made per diem, you know, making all that good money, like I literally had nothing. I didn't have a place to live. All I had was a piece of shit car and a shitty motorcycle. And guess what? I sold that motorcycle as soon as I got home because I needed money, you know. But if, like, you're from around, like, where I grew up, you can pretty much get a job if you know how to, like, swing a hammer a little bit and are willing to do some physical labor. So, like, I would find those jobs where I would work for, like, a roofing company for so long until I got paid or until they would front me some money, you know, and then I would move on to the next one until, like, eventually, like, hell, I had my buddy get me a job, too. And like, fuck, I wrecked the truck there. I got in an accident, played it all off. I did like all this shit. And eventually, like, I couldn't hold that shit no more because it got in the way of me using. Like, it got in that way. Like, I needed to use. And if you were like a problem, if you were a job that didn't allow me to do so, if you were a person that didn't allow me to do so, like, I'm going to find my way around it and I'm going to get what I need. And so, eventually, I couldn't hold a job, man. Like, that was no longer a thing. And then I tried to be a drug dealer. Look at me. Just look at me. Do I look like a drug dealer, bro? No, I look like a cop right now, but I swear to God. It's just the mustache. But no, dude, I was a horrible drug dealer, bro. I did all the drugs. And then I burnt all the bridges. And then they burnt my car to the ground. Yeah. No, for real, man, like, I became like this grenade, dude. This hurricane of, like, destruction, dude. And, I didn't realize any of this until I got clean, like the damage I was causing in my family, in my life, to the people who love me. And dude, like, I hurt the people that love me more than anyone else. And eventually, like I said, I burnt down all these bridges, man. Drug dealers didn't want to fuck with me no more because I'd figure out a way to rob and be like, oh, I got burnt, you know, like some bullshit like that. And then somebody was sick of it and they decided to light my car on fire. Which happened to not be my car because, you know, I couldn't afford shit. It was my parents' car, man. And fucked with the wrong person and they lit that shit up. I remember God working in my life. And I talk about this because, like, dude, God's always been showing up. Oop, there's a dog. God's always been showing up in my life, even though, like, I couldn't see it, man. He was always opening doors and I was just slamming them in his face. And, the night my car went up, dude, for some reason I got up at midnight. I woke up for some reason. My dogs weren't barking. It was just weird. And I decided to walk on my porch, and like when I walked out on my porch, I could just see the red coming up over the porch. The car was parked up against the house, and I lived in a duplex, a mining house. So like it's not just my family, it's also the neighbor who had a newborn kid at the time, like all the shit in this like house is about to catch on fire. My porch is catching, the car's going up, and I'm running in the house telling my dad to call 911. I'm in my underwear spraying the porch with the fire with my hose, my garden hose, trying to keep it from catching up. And like 911 was already out on a call. Like they just happened to already be out of call, so they got there in like 5 minutes, the local fire department. Put the fire out, like, thank God, man, because it was like the middle of the night, and like I almost burnt down my house and like my neighbor's house with a little kid. And still, dude, that wasn't enough for me to realize I had a problem. if you would have asked me then, like, dude, you're addicted, like, I would have been like, what the fuck are you talking about? Like, I didn't understand this. Like, I had no rational thinking at this time in my life. And it just progressed from there, dude. I did everything the basic text says, man. Like, that book talks about me, dude. Like, I stole the money from my dad, blamed it on my sister, helped him look for it, dude. I burned it. I did it. I swear to God, man. Like, my dad knew. We've talked about it. And I made amends to my pops, and he's like, I fucking knew. I knew it was either you or your sister. It was one of you two fucking junkies. Like, but he loved me anyways, man. He was there no matter what, you know. And I did all that shit until eventually, like, I took it all. I took everything valuable my parents had. And, like, dude, the whole time this is going on, like, it's not just me. Like, my sister's in this, too, with me, bro. We became using buddies at the end. And, like, it's crazy how that shit progresses because, like, my sister's story's not my story, but, like, we end up, like, intertwining, man. Because, like, I remember the first time I went to treatment is because she busted me shooting up. And, like, I remember that was one of those lines I never wanted to cross. I'm Joe Hippie Stoner, dude. I'll do everything, but I won't do this. Until one day, dude, I was too sick. I don't have a job anymore. I'm not a good drug dealer. I could only scratch up enough for one, and this way will make me feel good. And, like, when I crossed that line, there was no turning back, dude. It just started that effect, man. That snowball just kept rolling and getting bigger and bigger and bigger. And then she busted me the one day doing it. She, came in my room, and there I was. And I remember her being so disappointed in me. She's like, Joe, how can you do that? And, like, that was the first time I went to treatment. But, like, the fucked up part about that is, dude, like, I went to treatment for, like, whatever, an oil change. I didn't even hear about Narcotics Anonymous when I was in treatment because literally I detoxed and left. I didn't know what NA was. Like, really didn't. Never heard of it. And I remember I got home. I was home for, like, 2 days from that treatment facility. And my sister asked for help. She said, hey, can you come up here and help me? And there she was shooting up. And I remember feeling like the biggest piece of shit in the world because I was like, that's my fault, you know. And eventually, you know, just because I went to treatment for like 7 days, I mean, I stayed clean. Literally, I was clean for like probably 2 days or some shit and just right back at it, dude. But like I said, I made it to the end of the road where I burned every bridge there was. I took everything my family had. My sister, who was my using buddy, wouldn't even front me no more, you know, like... I remember begging her, dude. Like, hands and knees begging for that fucking next one. Like, jeez. That's a horrible feeling, man. And then finally, dude, when nobody would fuck with me, like, I was all alone. Like, total, complete disconnection. Like, what the disease of addiction wants. It wants me all alone, dude. And I was there. All alone. Like, I had no connection. Like, this is life. I'm gonna die this way. And I was all right with it, man. I wanted to die, dude. I prayed for God to take it away, man. And then finally, dude, I went to treatment. And this time when I went to treatment, I remember my mom gave me $20 to get cigarettes. That's all I had. And of course, I didn't get cigarettes. You know, I had to get one more before I went to treatment. So I showed up at a treatment center with nothing. I had a bag of clothes, no cigarettes. I was that dude bumming cigarettes at the treatment facility until, oh yeah, my parents are gonna get me cigarettes. Don't worry, I swear I'll pay you back, you know. I did, but like, I went to the treatment facility, and then, like, that's when I first heard about Narcotics Anonymous. Luckily, they had H&I in there, and we were just doing an H&I workshop over at the tree. If you missed it, I feel bad for you because it was awesome. But there was people doing H&I in there, and that was the first time I related to somebody that, like, I actually believed they were clean. You know what I'm saying? They told stories that sounded like mine. They talked about feelings like... about being all alone, and like I felt that shit, so like I believed a little bit, man. And we would do meetings in the facility, and like I started to understand the steps. Not really, I didn't understand the steps, let's be honest. I didn't understand the steps, but I knew about some steps that NA had. I'm like, wow, this is cool, you know. But then in the reading it says alcohol is a drug, and I'm like, yeah, maybe for you, but for me I was fine. I never had a problem with that one, you know what I'm saying? So like, I completed this treatment facility. And when I got out, I'm like, yeah, I'm going to a meeting. I'm doing what they told me. But first, I'm going to have a beer with my dad. You know? And I did. See, back then, dude, the only time me and my dad related is when we sat down and had a drink together. We drank fucking micro brews and whatever. And we would talk. Before that, we didn't talk about anything. You know? And He's like, are you sure you're supposed to be doing this? I'm like, yeah, I'm fine, Dad. It's not heroin. You know, it's cool. We're cool. I'm going to a meeting after this, you know. I had no idea about, I still didn't understand Narcotics Anonymous. But so, like, I drank the day I went out, and I went to a meeting, man. And I showed up late. I left early. I didn't get a sponsor. Didn't get a home group. Didn't do anything suggested to me. I did meet some people, though, you know, that are still around today, which is fucking cool. And, you know, I went to meetings for a while, but I kept drinking. And, like, I learned this disease is progressive. Like, I opened up Pandora's box, and I never thought I had a drinking problem, which was a total fucking lie, because alcohol is a drug. And I tell you what, when I was in active addiction, I was drinking every fucking day. I grew up in a mining town. They have a club that opens up at 8 o'clock in the morning for the miners. I would be there at 8 o'clock in the morning waiting for the dope man to get up, drinking a Jack and Coke every fucking day. So, like, I was just lying to myself when I left that treatment center. And, dude, it showed. Because that progression didn't take long. It was fast, man. It was within, like, 2 or 3 months, dude, I was in full-blown active addiction again. And I thought I was okay because I was just drinking for the most part. Maybe smoking a little crack here and there, but, like, I was just drinking. Stopped going to meetings, you know. And it was the 4th of July. And I remember coming home, and my mom was so twisted, I thought I was in recovery. I really did, dude. Like, I'm in recovery. I got home, my sister's still a full-blown active addiction, she's knotted out on the floor, and I come in, white girl wasted, and she's all fucked up, and I'm like, how dare you? How dare you? I'm trying to stay clean. As I'm drunk, telling her this shit, like, you're gonna ruin my recovery, blah, blah, blah. I was mean, dude, I was vile, dude, yelling at her, she's fucking knotted out on the ground, she didn't hear a word I said, you know, like, just straight dick. You know, and I thought I was on some high horse of recovery, dude. And, like, I was the complete opposite. I was in full-blown active addiction, obsessed. And, dude, you know how obsessed I was, dude? I went to bed that night angry, dude. Angry. Like, I put one, like, I was ready to go. I put one in me, man, before I even put one in me. You know what I'm saying? Like, I was ready to go. Like, I relapsed already. You know, obviously I did because I was drinking. But, dude, I went to bed that night. And at 6 in the morning, without an alarm clock, and if you know me, I need a fucking alarm clock to get up. I don't like the mornings. But without an alarm clock, like a bolt of lightning in the ass, man. Like, I woke up at 6. I went right downstairs, dude. My sister was still passed out. I stepped over, went to take a piss, came back, grabbed her purse, dude, found the works one more time, bro. And that one more time killed me. It was about 7 o'clock, my alarm was going off because I happened to have an outpatient appointment at a facility nearby, you know, because I wasn't completely recovered yet, you know what I'm saying? So, fuck it. My alarm clock's going off and I'm not answering it, man. And God working in my life, like, thank God I set my alarm that night, hammer drunk. Because, like, I wasn't answering it, and then my poor mother has to walk in the room and find her son, Blue. You know, there I was laying on the floor, dude, in my underwear, fucking Blue. I remember waking up to the Narcan. I remember the shakes, man, like shaking so bad. And then I remember the lie. I remember the lie that the disease of addiction was like all over me, dude. The EMS guy's like, how much did you do? I'm like, I didn't do nothing. I didn't do nothing. He's like, here's the stuff. How much did you do? And I'm like, I didn't do nothing. I don't know what you're talking about and shit. And like, dude, I was in full-blown denial. I couldn't tell the truth about anything. I couldn't tell the truth when the evidence was held in front of my face. I got charged for that fucking evidence in front of my face. You know what I'm saying? Like, and I still couldn't tell the truth. They took me in the ambulance, bro. And I showed up at this hospital all alone. This is the first time, like, that loneliness kicked back in real life. My parents' one car was burnt to the ground. My dad was already at work. I didn't have friends anymore at this point. I didn't have my buddy from high school. I didn't have this person anymore. Like, I had nothing at this point, man. I was in fucking active addiction, dude. I burnt all those loving relationships to the ground years ago. So, like, when I showed up at this hospital, like, I was the only one there. I showed up in my underwear. I didn't get dressed to get high that morning, so there was this skinny kid in his underwear with some puke on him, bro, in a hospital bed all alone. And, like, the Narcan was wearing off, man, and I remember being so angry and, like, so lost, so confused, and this lady who happened to be, like, a CRS, You know, some of us do this for a living now, you know. She came in, this nice lady, and was like, honey, do you need? I'm like, fuck you. Get the fuck out of here. I'm not going back. I was acting like I was going to prison or something. Like, I just spewed vileness onto this lady, and she left. I don't blame her. I would have left too, dude. Some angry, naked guy yelling at her, you know. So she left, and then, like, the shit started wearing off, man. I started coming back down to, like, my twisted reality, and in the hospital, you're in the ER, there's no, like, I wasn't in a room, there was no door, there was just a curtain, you know, and it's like half open, and dude, this nurse was taking like new RNs around the ER, and they roll up to my curtain, and she's like, here's a man that just overdosed on heroin. And I remember these little girls, they were younger than me, I was 25 at the time, and they looked at me like I was death. Like, I was no longer a human being. I was a fucking animal. And, like, I seen it in their eyes. And, like, what was left of my fucking heart, dude, just, like, sunk, dude. That sinking feeling, boom, like, hit my stomach, dude. And, like, I felt it, dude. I was all alone at this point. And, like, I was like, what the hell had happened? What happened with the past 10 years of my life? What happened to that happy kid in high school that wanted to do things? I wanted to be like an archaeologist. I wanted to be a vet at some point in time. Like, I wanted to go hiking all over the country. Like, all these hopes and dreams, dude, like, they disappeared into a little bag, dude. And they all fit in a spoon. You know, everything I fucking made at that point in time fit in a spoon. And dude, that CRS, she came back. Thank God. God worked in my life. She decided to give me one more shot. You know, like, she walked in that room. And like I said, nobody was there for me. My parents still didn't show up. Like, I was all alone. She came back and she's like, are you? And I'm like, take me. I didn't even let her finish the sentence. I'm like, please take me in treatment. Like, I need to go. They found me a pair of hospital pants and a white tee, and I was out. And I remember rolling up to this treatment facility. I'm walking in the door, and I can see my outpatient group down there. They're all looking at me like, what the fuck? And I'm like, yeah, I had a bad weekend, guys. You know, so I'm going to treatment. But, like, so I went into treatment this time, dude, and, like, I slept for, like, 12 hours straight because that Narcan kicked me right in the ass. And I woke up, and I'm like, what do I got to do? For the first time in my life, I was tired, dude. Like, I was really tired from, like, reflecting and looking at, like, what I've done, which was nothing. Like, I didn't leave a good mark on anything at this point in time. Like, I was finally tired, dude. So, like, when I woke up in treatment, I did whatever they told me to do. Thank God for H&I again, because they came back in. And like I said, I went to some meetings in my area, so these people came into H&I, and I knew them, kind of. I remember after H&I came in, and they're talking to us and stuff, and you chit-chat afterwards, I see this dude, and I'm like, hey, you remember me? He's like, kind of. And I'm like, well, I'm going to see you when I get out, man. Like, I'll be in a meeting and stuff. And he's like, we'll see. I'm like, this motherfucker. We'll see? Don't you know who I am? Like, I'm Joe Pistone, bro. Like, I thought I was something special, but, like, I was not. And, man, I was pissed. I was pissed that this dude just told me, we'll see. But I understand now, and I get it. You know, it was a driving force for me. So I'm grateful for that dude, because I was like, fuck you, I'm going to get it. Go to me as soon as I get out. Trust and believe, I'll be there. You know, and so I used it as a driving force, but like, I get what he says, man, because like, I've done H&I for a while now, man, and I hear that. And I say, we'll see. Like, here's my home group, man. It starts fucking at 8 o'clock. Come early. We'll be there. You know what I'm saying? And a lot of times they don't come, but sometimes they do. And when they do, like, boom, like, my heart gets two sizes too big, you know, like, I love it, like, that's narcotics and awesome for me, man, like, that really fills up my spirits. So, like, when I got out of treatment that time, like, I went to a meeting, I kissed in Johnstown, keep it simple, stupid, dude, I'll never forget, Thursday night, perfect meeting for me, you know, I was stupid as hell, yeah, so I remember driving down to Johnstown, passing Sollywood and stuff, and Sollywood, and like, I'm nervous, dude, I'm sweating bullets, because like, I'm right back down in Johnstown, I can make a left off this exit, like, I know where I'm going, I make a right this way, I know where I'm going, you know, but like, I'm going to this address, I'm going to this meeting, you know, so I walked into this meeting, bro, it was like walking into school for the first time ever, you know, as a little kid or high school or something. I was like carrying a basic text, like a Bible in my hand. I didn't know what I was doing. I was walking in there and I was scared, man. Like, and it was a good scare. It was the first time I left treatment and I was afraid. I was afraid because I didn't want to use again. I actually didn't want to get high again. Like, I didn't want to go back to the same shit I've been doing for 10 years. So, like, when I rolled into this meeting, like, I did what they told me. Is there any new members here who like to introduce themselves? I said, howdy, my name's Joe, I'm an addict, like, I need help. And, like, I was dead ass. Like, I was scared to death. And then I'm sitting there at this meeting, and I'm visibly, like, you can see me, like, shaking all over the place, dude. Like, this kid's fucking going through it, you know what I'm saying? Like, he needs help. And then they're like, is anybody sponsoring people? There was one guy that raised his hand for sponsoring people. He was here, but, and he was the only dude sponsoring people, and they told me, get a sponsor. So I'm like, that motherfucker's gonna be my sponsor. Like, he doesn't know it yet, but he's gonna be my sponsor, you know? And then I spotted the dude that did H&I, and I'm like, yo, that motherfucker, you know, like, I was already mad at him, had a whole resentment for 23 days. So I'm like, I'm glad I saw him. And so then I held on, and we're going through the meeting. I don't remember anything, can't remember the talk of nothing, not at all. But I do remember there was a girl nodding out in front of me, and I'm just like, fuck me. Like, I'm like losing my shit. This girl's nodding out. I'm just jealous at this point, you know? But I made it through the meeting, dude. We circled up, and we were getting ready to circle up. Some girl hands me a piece of paper. Mind you, KISS meeting used to be a halfway house meeting, you know, halfway house girl meeting. I didn't know that, but some girl handed me a piece of paper. And also, I don't know about anybody else, but like the end of the road for me, like I didn't give a shit about females. I gave a shit about a bag. No, that was it. So through treatment, like I realized, hey, I have a penis. And I remember I liked women. So when a girl handed me a note at my first meeting, I was super excited for all the wrong reasons. First thought wrong, you know. But whatever, you know, I stuck through, we circled up, I put this piece of paper in my basic text. I don't know what to do. We stuck it in there, dude. But we make it through prayer. I go ask the one dude that's sponsoring people, like, will you sponsor me? He say it would be an honor. He's like, here's my number. Don't call me until after 6 o'clock, but I will be at this meeting, this meeting, this meeting, this meeting, this meeting, this meeting. And this dude is still at this meeting, this meeting, this meeting, this meeting. He's there. You can find him religiously, man. You know, so I got a sponsor. And then I chased that dude that fucking told me, like, we'll see. I chased him out of the meeting, and I remember catching up and he's smoking a Marlboro Red. And I'm like, hey, dude, like, I'm here, man. He's like, oh, that's good. I'm like, what do you mean? He's like, I'm like, I'm here. He's like, well, what are you going to do now? I said, fuck, I don't know. I don't know what to do. So he's like, oh, just come with me, man. Like, so we ended up, like, going to the baseball park in Johnstown, Point Park. He had a 50-50 ticket. And he's like, I got to go check a 50-50 ticket. We'll go get some coffee. We'll talk. And so like, we end up going to the ballpark. He's checking his ticket on the board. And then there's some lady freaking out. They shut the lights down. The game's over. But she lost her daughter in the ballpark. And then he just starts taking off, and I'm like, what the fuck are you doing? And he's like, we're going to help. And I'm like, but there's cops right there. And he's like, yeah, we're going to go help. So we ended up, like, at this, you know, I saw cops, and I was like, fuck this. But you have to remember, I looked a lot different, like, 6 years ago. You know, I had long man bun and shit. We ended up helping. They found this little girl. We were out on the field and stuff. Like, it was just this badass night, man. The girl got found. We ended up outside of the ballpark just talking for an hour and a half, man. Turns out, like, he went to the same high school as me. He knew my sister, man. Like, we had, like, all these connections. And, like, he was super involved in the program, dude. He's talking about area. And I'm like, what the fuck is that? You know, he's talking about this shit I don't understand. And he gave me his number. He's like, yo, text me when you make it home good. He's like, I'm going to hit this meeting tomorrow night. If you need a ride, I'll pick you up. Like, just hit me up. And something happened that night. I truly believe, and like, this is me, man. I talked about earlier, like, the disease of addiction is like that disconnection. The disease wants me alone, dude, and like, isolate all alone. And that night, bro, something happened, and it was connection. And, like, to me, that's recovery. Like, dude, I got connected, dude. Like, a little spark happened in my heart, man. Like, this dude didn't want nothing from me. He doesn't care where I came from. He didn't care how much money I had. Like, he didn't wanting to use me for a ride or anything like that. Like, the dude just showed genuine, like, from the heart interest in, like, me staying clean and helping me out, just being a fucking nice guy. Like, that hug, like, oh, I'm going to hit this meeting tomorrow. Like, I felt that connection, dude. And that was that unconditional love that we talk about in Narcotics Anonymous. Like, it happened that night. And so, like, I remember going home, and I got home, and I remembered, oh, shit, I got that note in my basic text. Yeah. So I was all excited, and I fucking open up this basic text. I grab this note, and it says, ways to ground yourself when you're feeling a certain way. It said, don't focus on the problem in the room. Deep breathing is key. Counting colors. And at the bottom it says, love and respect. I'm like, motherfucker. Dude, if this wasn't enough for me to buy into the program of Narcotics Anonymous, I don't know what was. That note saved my life that night. That note, that meeting, it just all fucking came together in this, like, beautiful, I don't know, tornado of fucking goodness. And, like, I bought in. Yeah, tornado of goodness. You like that in chow. But, dude, I bought into Narcotics Anonymous from that morning. I'm like, I'm going to do this. For the first time in my life, I'm gonna do something. I'm not just gonna, like, maybe, sort of, like, no half measures. Like, I was all in. And that's what I did. I jumped into the program. And, like, beautiful fucking things happened. I ended up having to get a different sponsor because I was really whiny and a crybaby in the beginning. And that's okay. That's okay. Because I didn't know how to live my life. So I needed somebody I could call all the time and be like, how do I tie my shoe? You know, because I didn't know how to live with or without drugs, man. Like, I needed somebody like that. So I had to switch sponsors, and, like, then I got involved in a program. That same dude that gave me shit in H&I was the first person to take me to area service with 60 days clean. I remember showing up at, like, area service, and I'm like, what the fuck is this? Like, it was C-SPAN with addicts, dude. People arguing about this and that. But, like, dude, what I saw there, I got to see, like, the power of a group conscience. I got to see people stop arguing, invite a loving God in the room, and then make decisions. And, like, some beautiful shit happened. Like, that made me want to get involved in Narcotics Anonymous. So, like, if you've never been to area, I recommend you go, dude. I built a giant foundation because of area. I got to meet, like, see how big Lormont Highland area is. It's huge, bro. We're all over the place. From Bedford, Somerset, Indiana, Altoona. Now we're out towards Punxsutawney, yeah, we got some meetings out there that are involved in our area. Like, it's a beautiful thing. Like, so I bought into this program. As I stayed around, I started working some steps, man. Like, my life started to change. Like, the speaker before me talked about it, dude. Like, it was one thing for me to just abstain and, like, hold on and go to meetings, but, like, nothing really changed until I started, like, looking at Joe. You know, something I didn't like to look at for a long time. I like to dress myself up. Like, I like to, I learned that, like, nothing I put in me, on me, or around me will fix me. So, like, I had to work some steps. And as I started working steps, man, my life started getting progressively better. Like, I realized that, like, I could start something and finish it. I was always that guy that bailed out, like, halfway through something. I would, like, start doing this, and then it would get hard, and I'd be like, fuck that. I ran away from every problem I had. I ran away from every relationship I had. Like, I just fucking bailed. And, like, NA taught me to, like, show up and stay accountable. And that started at the home group level, man. Like, I remember joining the Friday night home group in Somerset, because there was only two meetings in Somerset at the time when I got clean. And, you know, doing the coffee pot, then becoming the GSR and going to area and, like, learning how this thing worked and, like, feeling a part. And, dude, that was the first time I felt a part of something, like, it's something so simple. Just holding a task and holding it down for, like, an extended period of time. I felt a part of it, man. And then I just wanted more of that. So I kept getting involved, dude, and I kept working steps. And then eventually, like, life on life's terms happen. Just because I got clean doesn't mean, like, everything's gonna be sunshine and rainbows. And, like, that was a shocker for me too, man. Like, if I'm being honest, my first year clean was a blast. I was a fucking wild man, dude. I was clean, living dirty, doing crazy shit, you know. But, like, I'm being honest, man, like, I was wild. But, like, going to meetings every day, dude, having renegade meetings at this, like, weird recovery house thing we started. It was, like, crazy. But, like, life was good, and life didn't hit me yet. Like, I was, like, on this cloud nine, dude, until, like, I remember the day I celebrated a year clean. It was about that day, I think, that day or the next day, like, I experienced the first loss of a member of Narcotics Anonymous, a young kid. A friend of ours, and then 2 days later, the first girl like I really liked when I got clean, she died too. And then like I realized like, yo, this is fucking life or death. Like this isn't just a social club. I don't come here just to meet friends and hit on chicks. Like I can't come here to save my life. And that was the first time I really like got that realization clean, you know. And so I stuck around and like, you know. Stayed about something until eventually, like, dude, I remember talking about my sister, and, like, dude, I always wait till the end to talk about this shit because I don't want to talk about this shit. I talk about this shit with my sponsor. I don't like to talk about it, but it's part of my story. Like, I had about 2 years clean, man, and my sister's still struggling with this shit. In and out of jail, in and out of rehab, and, like, I got to really wear the other shoe. You know, I got to feel the pain that I caused my family. You know, I got to be on the other side of that because, like, I had to deal with it with my sister. And I remember when she was in jail, dude, I was fucking happy. And, like, it was so fucked up for me because that's not the way I thought back then. Like, I was actually at ease when my sister was in jail because I knew she was going to eat and she was going to be alive, you know. And she got out on a Mother's Day the 1 year. Like, she got out on a Mother's Day. She literally OD'd that day. I remember being at the house. And, like, dude, I only had, like, a year and a half clean or something, or right around 2 years clean. And I remember, like, being the one Narcaning her and then asking her, like, how much did you do? How much did you do? And she's like, I didn't do anything. And I'm like, what the fuck? She's like, I didn't do nothing. I'm like, here it is, Christina. Like, it's in my hands. How much did you do? And it's like, I didn't do nothing. And I remember stepping back and being like, oh my fucking God, that is the disease of addiction. That is me. That is me. To a T. It was the exact words that came out of my mouth. And like, she told it to me. And the ambulance got her and NA kicked in. I called my sponsor. He didn't answer. Called somebody else. They answered. And I'm like, I'm fine. As I tell them I'm fine, I'm crying. You know, and like, that was the first time Narcotics Anonymous showed up for me when I didn't want it to. A dude came and picked me up. You know, he took me to the hospital. One member from NA showed up. Two, three, four, five. A dude who worked in the treatment field. Like, they all showed up, helped get my sister into rehab and shit. And, like, dude, I didn't have to stand alone. Like, I didn't have to be alone no more, man. Like, when I face something, I've got people around me that help me go through that, help me go through it clean. And they did. Eventually, dude, I wasn't the best person clean either. Like, I'm trying to be realistic like that. Just because I had some time clean doesn't mean I was fucking a great A human being, because I wasn't. I didn't treat my sister as great as I should have clean, you know. She was still using, she was trying a different form of recovery for her. And the only time she wanted to talk to me was when she was lit. And I didn't want anything to do with it, man. Like, I didn't want to talk to the disease. And, like, I would avoid her so much that she would come in the front door and I would literally go out the back door just because I didn't want to talk to her. I don't remember the last time I told my sister I loved her before fucking... I remember she came home that day. And, like I said, I'm not even fucking lying. I literally heard her come in the front door, asked my mom, like, did Joe walk the dogs? And when I heard her, I was like, Mom, I'm going to the gym. I went out the back door. About 20 minutes later, my mom calls me and she says, Joe, your sister's dead. And I remember saying, I said, shut the fuck up. And my mom just hung up the phone on me and I hit the ground, dude. And it kicked in, dude. I picked the phone, called my sponsor. He didn't answer. Called the second person. He didn't answer. Called the third person. He answered. And it was my buddy Chad. He's not with us anymore. I love him, bro. The disease fucking got him. That dude saved my life that day. Because he answered the phone. And he's like, what's going on? I said, I don't know. I think my sister's dead. Like, I just need to talk to somebody. Like, I need somebody with me. And, like, I called him. I went to the house. And they were taking her out of the basement. me and my sister, we had like no locks on any of our doors in the house anymore. There were no doors on anything because we were sneaky fuckers and we would get high everywhere, you know? And my sister went downstairs to boot up, and so she turned on the wash sink. And when she did, she booted up and she fell into the sink when she passed out. So she ended up drowning. And so the Narcan didn't help. My mother had to Narcan my sister and then like do mouth to mouth. And like my sister passed away. My mom's never been right since, dude. Like that's the honest fact. My mom's been in a full-blown active addiction for like years now. And my mom's slowly starting to fucking die from this disease because she can't put down a fucking drink. She can't walk anymore. And she's all right with it, you know? And that's fucking hurts to watch somebody slowly kill themselves. And there's nothing I can do except be there. When she wants to talk, when she wants help, that's why I show up even when I don't want to. And she's a big pain in my ass, and I fucking love her to death, but like, she had to deal with what me and my sister put her through for years. You know, and when my sister passed away, dude, like, I just needed a dude, Chad, picked me up. He took me to fucking the woods, dude, and just let me chill. And then I went to a meeting at night and cursed God and asked for help in the same fucking hand. And, like, N.A. showed up for me, man. I ran away for a little bit, and I remember talking to her predecessor. He's like, Joe, I seen you've been doing a lot of hikes and doing all this adventurous shit, blah, blah, blah. I'm like, yeah, I'm trying to find some answers. He's like, hey, Joe, the answers are right here. He's like, come back to Narcotics Anonymous, you know, and he was right. The answers were in the steps. The answers were of being in service, of being a good home group member, of being a good sponsor, being a good sponsee, you know. So I showed up and stayed, and dude, like, life has got better, man. There's still good, there's still hard times, there's good times, there's bad times, but I, as long as, like, I don't put one in me, dude, like, then I'm good for another day. And, like, life just keeps getting better, man. I'm trying to buy a house, which is fucking insane, you know? And that's cool, man. I'm excited about it. And, like, I love all you guys, and I'm glad you guys have me here tonight, today. I don't know. I'm out of it. Thanks for letting me speak.